Welcome to episode number 48 of the Speaking Podcast, and today my guest was Daria Vodopjanova, and she has given some excellent advice. I'm sure you'd enjoy it. As always, you'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Speaking Podcast, and also we've got a meditation podcast and a Learn Polish podcast, and all can be found on roycolin.com. So be sure to share with your friends and also give us a positive review because it all helps. So I hope you enjoy this week's episode. So welcome to the Speaking Podcast. And today my guest is Daria Vodopjanova. Did I pronounce it correctly?
Perfect, right.
So Daria, you might tell the audience your journey, who you are.
Well, first of all, right, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm very excited to share a bit about myself. So where to start? I am a Russian, Ukrainian, Sweden-raised entrepreneur who kind of lived in many different countries, traveled many worlds, places. But what I have always been is an entrepreneur. I love entrepreneurship. I think it's amazing how we can be creative and impact through a mission, through a way of thinking, through a way of, you know, having unique messages coming out from our mind, from our creativity, the way we link things. And then as a founder or a visionary, we can come and build a community around that and impact clients, impact teams. So for me, entrepreneurship is a huge thing. So I've been in the training business. I've been in the educational business for almost 10 years. We had a language school for 5 years in France with my partner, and then we moved to Australia and then to Portugal to train more into digital marketing. We moved into digital marketing and social media and speaking, how to really support small business owners to kind of scale up. And the last years, we have co-founded a company called Thought Leadership Academy, where we basically help what I call mind artists, creative visionary thinkers, coaches, consultants to scale a business sustainably and joyfully around their idea. So idea worth sharing, like let's say in TEDx, they talk about that. That's what we base our core business on. What does that person have in themselves that is so unique, a way of seeing some things, and how can they then go out and speak about it, write a book about it, have consulting business, etc. So speaking is one big part of that, for sure.
Excellent. So before, like, as I mean, you've done a load of things, and you know, 2 TEDx's, you know, keynote speaker, and there's a lot of things I want to discuss with you. But I'd like to know your journey, because you obviously started as, you know, very young as an entrepreneur, but you're actually speaking, you know, when you were in school and even afterwards. Was it something that was actually easy for you, or did you have to go through a kind of transformation?
The speaking or the entrepreneurship?
The speaking.
So to be very honest, I started with speaking quite late. My partner, Sebastian, we've been to a couple for 10 years and have companies together for 9 years. And he was the one who always loved the stage. And about 6 years ago, he was invited to do his first TEDx in Toulouse, where we lived. As he speaks 12 languages, he was invited to speak about our language method that we developed. And at that point, the organizer asked me if I would like to do a talk. And I just turned it down because I was too scared. And that was 6 years ago. I was giving trainings. I was leading groups. But when you lead a group and you speak, it's very different, because when you speak, you have all the eyes on you and you don't have so much interaction. I realized later that the dialogue is still happening, but it's not verbal. But it took me some time to understand that. So actually, the first time I was on a stage, not giving a workshop or a training, was when we moved to Australia about 4 or 5 years ago. And somehow people found me for a small social media week, and they wanted me to speak about business development and somehow for small businesses. And I was like, I can go and do this. It's not going to be so hard. And Sebastian was supposed to be there to support me, my partner. And his bike broke down on the way. So I'm standing there with all these people staring at me. I think there were 30 people, but for me, it felt like so much. And I'm shaking and I'm thinking, okay, I'm on my own here and I have to kind of figure this out. Because if you're always given workshops, you just send out questions and you interact. So most of the time you don't speak. You give some support, but they are the one actually working. So it's very different. So I'm standing there and they're all staring at me and they're waiting for me to do something. And my throat is all dry and I cannot speak. So I had to hold myself. I was holding the table and just like gripping myself, like I just have to go through this. And I just spoke very fast and I didn't ask any questions, like just get it over with. And it was so scary because I had no idea how to do it. The second time I was on stage was TEDx, because Sebastian was re-invited to speak in Melbourne. We were living in Melbourne at that time on the stage. And that time I said, I have to go up on stage, especially as more and more women were starting to tell me how empowerment, how much I empowered them through my trainings, through my social media posts, etc. So I felt that, okay, Daria, I have to kind of step up my game, because it's not about me. It's about the others. It's about showing other stories. It's not only about women or men, but a diversified story. How can we share a story from, that it's not always the same that we see on stage. The stage, it's for everybody. The stage is for anyone who has a different story. So I wanted to empower others to do it. So I had to do it myself. But that time, the second time around, I realized that there is no such thing as I'm just a natural speaker, or I just get up and I do it. The actual work behind speaking is training. It's like you're training for a marathon, and realizing that, breaking that myth that I have to do it by myself and I have to be natural in the very first beginning, that's what shifted things. So I started to get training and got TEDx speaking coaching training. Sebastian is TEDx speaker coach, so I was lucky to have that. You know, he was training the whole edition, but also I was having the second coach that was working with me on my energy level, on how do I show up. So I had to get two coaches. And the amount of work I put in to become a better speaker was hours. Like 1 minute on stage is almost 1 hour of preparation. So if you're on the stage for 30 minutes, it's 30 hours of preparation. But we don't speak about it because we want to believe that it's natural. It's much easier to say it's a natural speaker, because then I don't have to do the work. If we say, oh, I can be as good as that person on stage if I work hard, it's much more like, oh, it's actually myself who's lazy or not doing the work. So I realized that we have a misconception of how a good speaker become a good speaker, and that we have to work for it, and we have to get training, we have to get a coach, we have to look at other speakers online, and you know, put hours into becoming and a better speaker, learning the vocabulary, learning our unique way of being on the stage, learning our unique way of, you know, showing up and what preparation we need. We learn the processes. We know how to, okay, if I'm going to speak on stage in 2 weeks or 2 months, I know what I have to do because I've gone through the process with professional speakers who taught me how to do it. So yeah,
I love it. I love it because a lot of people actually think that it's so easy and that somebody has it or somebody doesn't. And what I've noticed over, because I've interviewed, you know, maybe 50 people now at this stage, and the amount of people, the amount of preparation that they do, some people prepare a speech, they would say it 100 times beforehand. You know, when I heard that, I was like, you know, it's like, so how many times would you actually do the speech for the TEDx prior to actually the speech itself?
So Sebastian has a very unique method. So you don't learn it by heart and you don't have any notes, but you learn, you work on the core message. So the preparation, I would say, is I would prepare the talk maybe 10 times over and over again from, you know, between the several moments. We actually work on the messaging, work on the vocabulary, work on my how I'm showing up. But it is based on, one, the unique message, really getting a good idea of what I want to share. So when people come out of that, it's not about just like, oh, that was inspiring, but then they go home and they do nothing with it. Or it's just too overwhelming. So it's just having the good amount of, you know, inspiration and information. And then how do we show up? The most important is actually your vitality. I heard someone, I don't remember exactly who was saying, but when you're on the stage, you need to show your excitement to the audience. Like if you show, I'm excited about this message, then I excite the others. So we have to work on our vitality. So I do a lot of meditation preparation. Like if I have a space, sometimes we have the chance to have like a speaker lounge, or if you're staying in a hotel where you're speaking, you have the chance to actually do like a meditation. I usually do 30, 40 minutes meditation just before going on the stage. I do breath work. I do, I calm my nervous system down, because it doesn't feel natural when you go on the stage with people on, you know, staring at you. You still have to get into a mental state of like, I'm going to be grounded when I go, and I can just get out there and just, you know, be there with them, excited to be with them. So I would say it's not about only the message, and it's if we can learn to calm ourselves down and use tools like breath work and meditation, we can learn how to really develop the core message, the tools to kind of, you know, dissect and distillate the message we are trying to say in a way that will not be misinterpreted, and people will have a better understanding of what we're trying to say. Then the actual over and over again, it's not so much. What I do though is that I listen to myself. So I have a process of very simply, I have to kind of break it down, is that I will work with Sebastian and my other coach first, and then they will help me to understand the core message according to the audience I also work with. I have to also think who's going to be in the stage, how are they, what do they believe, anything I know about them. So let's say if I speak in front of real estate, if I speak in front of marketers or nomads, it's going to be a very different approach how I speak. I'm still myself, but my message will be different. And then when I understand that, I will start to work out the 3 to 5 core pillars of my talk, with the supporting stories, with supporting, you know, really developing the message from that. And then I will train myself to record myself and listen. And listen, how does that sound? And write down notes, what didn't I like about it? And try to have 24 hours in between to kind of digest that, and then come back to the talk. So it's good to have a couple of months actually to do that. If you can have at least 10 weeks before you go do a talk, it gives you the time to feel your talk. Like I remember one of the first TEDx organizers I actually met was in Melbourne, and he was saying, if you feel like your talk is at 100%, go to 120. Like you almost want to be tired of your talk, you know, because when you're tired of your talk, you live it. You can wake up at night and you can get up and you can do it. So that's how in it you need to have. Many times we get to 95%. We say, I have it. But when you get on the stage, you don't have it, because you need to push yourself a bit more. It doesn't need much, but those extra couple percentage there where you train yourself a bit more and you work with the talk and you live the talk and you listen to the talk, like you're in it, you're in the bubble for a couple of weeks, then that's when you get to be a better speaker.
No, that's excellent advice. And I've had some of the guests were talking about the grounding and giving grounding techniques and breathing techniques. And what I've noticed is, because I was in some competitions for the Toastmasters, and one time I was sitting down listening to the Polish competition first, and I didn't do any breathing, I didn't do any, and then I got up and I should have won it because I had a very good speech, but I didn't because my energy levels were zero. And it's just from learning from that and just from what you've just said, because it's great advice. And once you do it, then you get more energetic. You come across better and people get your message. So it's excellent what you've just mentioned. So you actually do keynotes as well, yeah? You might tell me some of the keynotes.
Yes. So after TEDx, I started to do more keynotes. I was starting to work more as a keynote speaker, because I realized that I really want to get my message out and I want to inspire others to go on stage. For me, that's very important, that they see that I can do it and they can do it. So it's not only for specific people that the stage is available. So I start to speak about specifically on LinkedIn was a big thing that I've been speaking about for last years, because as we work, our mission is really to help, you know, infopreneurs, mind artists, small business owners to scale sustainably and joyfully. And I don't want to spend too much time on social media, to be very honest, because I believe that most of the things, if it's for small business owners, it feels overwhelming. They need to be on Instagram, they need to be on Facebook, they need to be everywhere, and they have nothing that really comes from it. So when I realized the power of LinkedIn, I said, I want to really work on LinkedIn or only want to focus on LinkedIn. So I've been working, when it comes to our marketing part of our company, we focus entirely on LinkedIn development to get lead generation, to get speaking opportunities. And I've been speaking, for instance, at RE/MAX Europe annual convention last year about that. So real estate as well. I spoke about that in several occasions with women in digital, women in tech, you know, conferences, businesses. And then I also spoke about, it all comes back to how do you actually scale smart. So many times I also speak about group dynamics. So it's basically the marketing departments. If we look into the three pillars of our company, we have the marketing part, which is LinkedIn, the communication, which is the speaking, and then we have the inner journey of the leader. So I've been speaking about LinkedIn for lead generation when it comes to strategy, how to get more speaking opportunities, how to get on the stage in 6 weeks. I was invited by with the women in tech in Porto. They flew me in, and I was speaking about that. And I also speak about the inner journey. So how do you build up the support system, the time management, the focus to work on your mission? So the vitality of yourself, because as a founder, as the spokesperson, you need to take care of yourself first. So those are the topics. But LinkedIn has been the one that I've been speaking most of, because it's something that people are kind of curious about, but they don't know where to start. They don't know how to go about it. And it's a topic that I really love.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. And to be honest, what you mentioned there is you stopped with LinkedIn, and you know I've looked at a lot of them, and I see LinkedIn as actually, you know, there's more people doing the posts and everything. You're well ahead of the curve there. But say for example Twitter, and I know it happens in Instagram as well. There's kind of groups that are I follow you, you follow me. And there's people following 10,000 people and being followed by 10,000 people, and they think that they've got an audience of 10,000 people, but they don't. Probably they'd be lucky if they have 100. And
yes,
I've even not, like, because at one stage I know it was something like 7,500 on Twitter, and then I just started, because I didn't really know them, I just kept the ones that I knew, and it was a slow process, but I unfollowed a lot, and I get no interaction, the odd like on the Twitter, but it's mainly, you know, Facebook and some of Instagram. And I'm seeing LinkedIn is not huge for me, but I see that it's growing. So I know that I need to work on it better. So, but yeah, you're dead right. You put your energy into something that's working, and you know, you're dealing with professionals as well. And professionals tend to be on LinkedIn.
Exactly. And I want them to, for me, a big part of our mission is sustainability and being conscious business owner. So having the whole thing with hustling and overworking and trying everything, it's not what we are, you know, want people to do. So our goal is for people to get smarter. If you can do the same lead generation in 1 hour that you will do in 10 hours online, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you spend more time with your family or actually developing your core ideas or preparing for you for a talk instead of trying to speak randomly with anyone who comes your way? Because just having no followers will not give you leads. In the end, if you're a business owner, you're not in a not-for-profit organization. You still want to make money with your business. And in that way, to be very, you know, straight to the point, if you have a business, you want to make profit. So in that case, how will you be sustainable and use less of your time in your business hours, let's say, on social media? You can do whatever you want in your free time, but if you are serious about, you know, scaling or growing or using the best way the time that you're working on your business and your mission, then being on social media and randomly speaking different groups or, you know, scrolling your Instagram will not make the difference.
Exactly. And you have a nonprofit as well there, because is that still operational?
Yes. So we have a non-for-profit. So we had the language school for 5 years, and for us in France, it was very important. We have a footprint of what we did. So we developed a non-for-profit called the Language Caravan that works with workshops and activities around the fact of creating connections between people, culture barriers, language barriers, breaking them. So it goes through language games, theatrical games. We brought in different experts. It was a lab. So it has always been a lab. We brought in artists, journalists, linguists, historians, anyone that was curious to miss and match different topics. And we worked around the mission of how can we break cultural linguistic barriers. And that has been operating for almost 5 years. So we haven't lived in France for almost 3 years now. And we still have a team of, I think it's about 15 people. Some of them I have not met actually because I haven't been back in Toulouse for almost a year. But it's still operating because I believe a non-for-profit should not be around the founder, it should be around the mission. So my first goal with creating non-for-profit was to make it live without me, because it's not about me, it's about the mission. So from the very first beginning when we created it, we wanted to say, how can we make it live? How can people feel an ownership of this project? How can they feel part of it? And to be very honest, we have in the last, I think it's 4 or 5 years we had it, we have almost never had anyone leaving. Even people are staying. There's almost no conflict. It has been a very transparent, non-hierarchical way of leading the team with a lot of transparency online. We build out systems, because that's what I was doing when I was living in Sweden, of an actual business, in the way we operate the company in a very, like communication is key. We don't have direct messages. We don't have emails. People cannot call me. It's all go through a transparent platform. So that way, the ownership of information, the ownership of decision making has allowed people to actually stay in the non-for-profit for almost, for years, even when we left, because they felt that they have, it's their profit, non-for-profit as well. It's their mission. So that has been a very successful launch of a non-for-profit, I would say.
Wow, that's very interesting. And that's something you should try to maybe teach others to do, because sometimes when people set up a nonprofit, it's around them and it either works or it doesn't. So I know that's a model. I presume it could be your next TEDx speech on something like that.
I have had people telling me about that before, because it was very successful. Having not almost, I think there was had one person leave in 5 years, one person who left as a volunteer. So it's really not often that we have people so happy to be part of something for so many years and, continue investing their time, because they're not getting paid for it. It's really about their time and the community. So yeah, this is something I always had in mind to kind of develop, because it would be great to at least create a kind of a short workshop on how we did it and what can be reapplied in other not-for-profit.
Our book, because that's something, because I want to create a charity as well, and that's something that I would be very interested in, because it should never be around the person, it should be about the mission.
Exactly, for sure.
And you're an author as well?
Yes. So I wrote a book when I was living in Australia. So when we lived in Australia, actually quite a funny story. I was not supposed to write a book, but my partner is always the one, he's a real visionary. He will create like new ideas, like how about doing this and that? And then I get excited. But the thing is, I actually do it and he doesn't. So he said, I want to write the book. And I said, oh, that sounds great. And then I got that idea into my head and I went to entrepreneurship day and I was sitting there and the guy on the stage, he said, so you turn around to your partner on your right and then tell them, what is your goal for the year? And I turned around to my partner. I didn't know her then. Her name is Nancy. And I said, Nancy, well, I didn't know. Well, actually, I said, I don't know. It's a bit silly, but I want to write the book, because my partner has kind of put that in my head. And she said, well, that's not silly, because I'm actually an editor. You're lucky today. And I said, wow. And then I didn't think about it so much. And then she turned around to me and she said, well, to be very honest, I'm a retired editor. And I start to collect like small metal pieces in the street to create wall sculptures. So I actually want to become an artist. That has always been something I want to do. I always wanted to be an artist, but I was never in my career. So now when I'm retired, I would love to create my first art exhibition. And I said, well, you're very lucky, because I actually give workshops in art gallery. And now at that time, I was working with one of the top art galleries. They brought me in to give, like I was doing for small business owners. They were using my workshops and I was my trainings, and that was getting me in-house to train their artists how to become a better business owner. So in 2 weeks' time, I got her, I got her in contact, and she had her first art exhibition. And now, years after, she's having, lots of them. She was in the library, the public library in Melbourne. She's has, I'm even sure that she has, like, I don't remember if she was having her own art gallery or someone else, but I mean, she's just crushing it. She's all over. She's having Instagram. She's selling her art. She's just a very successful artist. And she helped me to write my book. She helped me because we did a kind of a swap. Where she supported me for almost a year to publish my book. I was working with a real editor, and I wanted to write a book because that was just an idea I had, but I actually wrote a good book because I ended up, you know, working so hard for 14 months to rewriting. I was almost like, I don't want to do this again. But she taught me how to write a good book. So my intention was not so genuine when I started. I just wanted to, you know, do it. And to be very honest, she allowed me to become a better writer, better idea creator, better, you know. She took me through the process of writing a good book because she was very tough with me. And, you know, when you're in it, you're like, okay, I just have to push through. And 14 months in, when you have been rewriting, when I published it, I was very happy with the result.
Excellent. Yeah. That's a wonderful story. And the scaling, you're taught leadership. You might tell us more about that.
Yes. So when I was living in France, we lived almost for 5 years in France with our training company. And when Sebastian did his TEDx about 12 languages, how to learn 12 languages, we started to get a lot of momentum and people were contacting us to work with us. And that stage, we didn't know how to scale because we only... like everything we learned was from ourselves. I learned a bit from a mentor I had in business. Sebastian learned from Vigino, but we were doing it like do it yourself, basically. So when we started to have so much leads, we could not really take more. We had no idea how to scale it. And anything that came our way was the traditional business development. They were telling us, get yourself an office, get yourself some, you know, people that you will train in your methods, and then they will do it for you. And that was for me like a horror story, like really the prison. I could not manage to see anything worse than being in the office and managing people and never speaking to my clients, never speaking to my students. So I didn't felt it at all. And for we were 2 years searching for like a solution to scale. We were looking for business owners. We went to the entrepreneurship fairs in Paris. We did anything to kind of get ourselves out of our own head. But after 2 years of frustration, when people were like, take a loan, do this, do that, we were just feeling like we don't have the answer. This is not the answer. So we quit everything. We closed the school. We left France and we moved to Australia. And why Australia is because we had to get away, far away to think. And so if I'm going to stay in France, I'll find small solutions. But if I change and shift my environment, and if I change where I am and I don't know anyone and I can be anyone and I just have to reshape my perspective, that's gonna open up to new ideas. That was our idea. And so we went to Australia and we lived in Melbourne, and that's where I discovered thought leadership. That's what I've been looking for, but I haven't found in Europe, which was really, how can you be a coach, consultant, speaker, author, idea creator, someone who wants to share, a teacher somehow, a trainer. How can that person still be out there in the field with the students, with the participants, with the audience, actually have the community? That's what thrives us. When I see someone learning or someone developing and have like a light bulb, that's what I'm looking for. That's what excites me, not be managing a tax declaration in the office. So I realized that there is another way, and that's the way we build out our own business, to really where we are most of the time out facilitating. We're giving a retreat last week and we are, you know, having people online, we are speaking, we are writing books, we're spending a lot of time with our ideas and with our audience and participants, with our clients. But we have a small team behind us who actually does the management, the administration, all this stuff. So basically shift it around and say who is out in the field and who is in the office managing, so we can do it. That's thought leadership. That's how we build our thought leadership businesses. So we brought back our understanding and then we developed on that in Europe. So we created the company called Thought Leadership Academy based on that. So it's was our own need to do it. It was our own need to, how can I be happy, joyful, sustainable in my growth because we were growing, but we had no idea how to do it. And how can we help others who are in the same situation when they're getting to a roadblock of saying, well, I'm making enough money, I have enough clients, but I cannot impact more people. And this is not going to work. I cannot just give 9 coaching sessions per day. You know, I cannot just continue doing like that. It's not scalable. It's not sustainable. It's not joyful. And I'm not going to be a good person for my clients, not for my family either. So that's what we do. Our mission today is just really support those mind artists, those thought leaders who want to find a better way to scale their impact, but still have a balanced life.
No, that's wonderful, because people kind of get into the rat race and, you know, they start the business with, you know, all this passion and everything. And then they have to do the accounts, they have to deal with legal and everything. And, you know, you've kind of twisted that around. And I love that, because at the end of the day, you get into business because you want to be free and you want to do what you love to do. And, you know, you should keep doing that, because that's how you can be extremely successful, instead of stuck in the nitty gritty dealing with the, you know, the government and everything. Because, you know, for me, I mean, I've had a lot of different companies, and they're the things that suck my energy, and they're the things that you procrastinate about, and they're the things that you put off, you know, whereas the stuff that you love, you constantly have energy for it.
Yeah, see, and people, when you're a thought leader, for me, it's not about, you know, just like being known for something, but when you have gone to the extremes of understanding your unique messaging and the way you're seeing the world and how you can teach others to do the same, like you have a process that can be anything, can be environment, can be leadership, it can be podcasts, but you have something that you want to share with the world, people are actually paying for your excitement in your vitality. And I want to come back to vitality, because when you work like crazy and you're not enjoying it anymore, you're not vital. You're doing like automated, you know, talking, you're just repeating yourself. So as a thought leader, you need to find the passion again and say, why did I start this? Why do I love people? Why do I care about these people? Because if you're excited and if you're really like, I'm here for you and I want you to feel this way, you're also a role model for what's possible. So for many times, our clients are telling us, well, you and Sebastian, you show that we can have a sustainable, joyful business and scalable business, still having time for your couple, still having time for your family, for yourself. And no, we take that very seriously, that you have the balance.
I mean, you're together 10 years and that's actually an incredible thing as well, because, you know, some people can't work together, but you're making it work, and you're traveling around as well. You know, you call it nomads, I call it yes sane, because it's like two positives instead of two negatives. But, you know, you've been around the world, and I've seen you in Portugal and I think in Pula as well. And, you know, you kind of go to different, and I think that's amazing that you can actually do that, you know, and the both of you are able to actually operate from anywhere in the world.
Yes. I mean, it's a choice, and I think you have to go slow. And our goal is not to travel. Like, we don't travel to, let's go to Brazil because we want to see Brazil. It always has a reason why they want to be there. This year, so 2019, we decided to build our like destination based on only one question. And the question is, what do I want to experience right now? So based on that, what is the experience you want to have? How do you want to grow? Sometimes it's together, sometimes it's not, has told us where to be. So for instance, right now we're in Mallorca because we were here for several reasons, but we also wanted to be on the island and just have some time to focus and enjoy nature and do the retreat here. But now we're going to back to Barcelona, and the experience we wanted to experience is to be able to walk, to do yoga in the city, to go to the networking events, to meet our friends, to have all that access. Before Mallorca, we were in the countryside because I was thirsty for mountains. I felt I need to be in the mountains to feel better. So it's really about how can I create the best conditions for my inner intuition of what do I need right now. And based on that, we don't have a set apartment location since December last year. We had to kind of decide, we had an apartment in Portugal, and we had to decide, are we going to stay or not? And we realized we travel so much, we don't want to be in flights always coming back to Portugal. What if we leave 1 year of experimentation or say, what do I want to experience right now? Who do I want to be with? What do I want to create? And based on that, we could take the decision of going to Pula for Mind Valley University for the whole month in Croatia. We could go to AFES and other type of events, or even go speak somewhere where we thought, okay, let's go. And that allowed us to be much more in tune and much more intuitive with our business and our mission, because we didn't have something holding us back. Of course, it's not sustainable for long term, and it's something we kind of allowed us to do this year. And now we want to kind of get grounded for a couple of months, because the experience we want to have right now, again, is to be in the same location for 2, 3, 4 months.
And I find that as well, when if you are moving around, that you don't have as many items that you're carrying with you. You know, it's more experiences, restaurants, places you're staying, things you're doing is more important than actually having any products.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, we most of our time this year, we have been basically between Portugal and Spain. If you look into it, it's still quite, you know, we wanted to stay in Europe. We didn't want to go after Australia and Asia. We wanted to be here. It has just been that someone is, you know, booking us for speaking, for training. We are attending an event. We are creating a retreat. And based on that, instead of just going for 2 days, we stay for 3 weeks. So like here, we've been here. We were here for a wedding. We were here for our retreat. But we stayed 2 weeks to have the time to not just run around, but actually work from here and use the energy that we build up to go deeper and say, okay, before we go back to Barcelona, let's take another week just to slow down and work from here.
And I know Sebastian can speak, is it 12 languages that he can speak?
Yes, he speaks but 12 languages.
But you, I'm assuming you have a few as well from, you know, do you speak as Swedish?
I speak five. Yeah, wow. I speak Russian, Swedish. My stepfather is Greek, so I kind of have, I speak Greek. When I'm in Greece, I can speak it. I cannot just like switch it on, but when I'm there, I manage to have a conversation in Greek. And then English and French. We speak French, the two of us. And then, the other languages. Those are the five languages that I feel, you know, comfortable with.
And have you spoke in other languages or just English? As in on stage?
Yeah. I do trainings in French. I've done speaking in French. I was invited to several events in France as well. And I work with our trainings, LinkedIn trainings in French for the French market. Swedish, of course. So those are the ones that I spoke. I have never actually given a talk in Russian and neither in Greek. I think in Greek, I would not be too comfortable because I have more like a spoken language vocabulary, but Russian, I could do it if I just had some time to prepare. Because that's the vocabulary I don't have, you know? I left Russia when I was six. So that I don't know how to say certain things in Russian. I mean, would like have to learn them, but that would be possible, of course.
And like to say, even with the French and everything, do you do it differently? Is there something that, you know, because with the different audience, or do you use your same kind of techniques?
You know what? To be very honest, I feel like we have an alter ego in each language. We are not the same. We are different when we are like speaking French or Swedish or Russian or, you know, I'm not the same person. I have a friend who actually wrote a book called Alter Ego about languages. And she believes that we have like, you know, we are just, our identity, our linguistic identity is different in different languages when we speak them. So I'm sure that the way I communicate in French is like even the body language is different. You know, I lived there for 5 years. I speak French every day with my partners, with Sebastian. So I have a very French way of, you know, showing up on stage. I cannot go in the way I would do in the Australia market because that was much more like pumped and, you know, motivated. And it's a very, like, you have to be professional when, especially in Melbourne, and there is so much competition. You know, you have to be good on stage. You have to prepare yourself because people are taking, you know, out of 40 events, they have chosen to be in your event. So you want to make sure that they are, you know, really happy with it. Whereas if you are in the Portuguese market, let's say, and you will do talk, the competition is much less. So if you are even too professional, it will show off bad. So you have to also balance, like, how is it culturally? If I would be the way I would do in the US or in Australia, can that work in Portugal? And I would say probably not. You have to be more low key. You have to adapt yourself to how people are speaking, how people are communicating. Or if you're in France, I have to use my French vocabulary, my French jokes, my French body language. The same core message is there, but the way I show up will be different because I'm not communicating the same way when I'm in France. It's me, but it's my alter ego, my French alter ego.
No, that's very interesting. And it's actually brilliant that you can adjust, because I've seen a lot of, especially American, because Americans tend to get people jumping up on stage, clapping and singing. Yeah. And yeah. It's, some people feel very awkward with that, you know, and it's just adjusting to, you know, the audience.
For that, I usually tell our clients who do the speaking preparation for TEDx or just speaking, there's a video you can watch on YouTube that shows Tony Robbins at Oprah. Just watch that one, because Tony Robbins is new, like, he's known for jumping around for 14 hours in a day, and he's very energetic. And, you know, seeing him in a small, small theater, I mean, for his standards, he's used to speak in terms of 15,000 people. Maybe there's like 500 people there or 800. It's a smaller theater. It's more exclusive. It's more intimate. I think it's the Soul Sessions with Oprah. And if you watch that on YouTube, you can see how the crescendo is coming. So he comes in and he adjusts. He's a brilliant speaker to watch, just to really watch how he's doing. And the audience is very calm. When he comes in, the speakers before him have been talking. They're slowing the pace. They're, you know, they're more like inspiration, mindfulness, all this stuff. So he comes in and he has the same beautiful pace. And then throughout the hour, he builds up to Tony Robbins. And you can just watch how he takes the audience on that journey. But he doesn't start Tony Robbins style. He starts off as the other speakers. And he mirrors the audience. So he's aware of that. He cannot just go there. He just has to build it up slowly. So you can, to kind of answer your question or to add on that, you can do it. But you need to be cautious with how does the audience feel. And for that reason, one good tip is to be in the audience to talk before yours, or even a couple, like if you speak in the afternoon, what I usually do is I will sit in a session and see how the audience reacts. So when the speaker will speak, do they react to his jokes or her jokes? Do they feel like lazy in the space? Do they watch their phones? And then you can think about how can I be aligned with their energy, but also make them a bit more energized and engaged. So really being in that conference hall, in the audience during the morning or when you can, just to see, even watch, you know, previous recordings of that conference or that event, will allow you to get a feeling of the soul of the audience.
Excellent. So I know you do some LinkedIn, so I want to know how people can actually contact you and, you know, get to actually do your training and all that. So what's the best way to get in contact with you?
So the absolute best way would be to add me on LinkedIn. They can just write dariav.com, because I have a very long surname. So
I can put that in the description of the podcast anyway.
Okay, great. So yeah, if they just write dariav.com, they get directed to my LinkedIn. And then they can add me and just write a note that you listen to this podcast. And then if you have any questions, if you want to know anything more about our LinkedIn course or our speaking training for thought leaders, it's specifically for anyone who wants to grow their thought leadership, grow their impact through their messaging. They can just contact me and we can speak more.
Excellent. Listen, it's been fantastic. Really enjoyed our conversation. And I know I need to get Sebastian as well, because, 12 languages and, you know, just a bit, the other side of the partnership would be good. So we need to organize that. So thank you very much.
Sure. Oh, pleasure. Thank you for having me. And I hope this has been valuable for your audience.
Of course.
Thank you, Roy.
Of course.
So I hope you got as many notes as I did with Daria. And you will find Speaking Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Speaking Podcast. You'll find all episodes, as well as our meditation podcast and our Learn Polish podcast, on roycall.com. Be sure to share with your friends and give a positive review. Until next week, take care.